Chapter 31. I glance over at my alarm clock again. It's 4 minutes later than the last time I checked, and we're still working on my pants. I keep sucking in, and my mother keeps tugging, but my black wool suit pants won't zipper all the way up. "I think you should wear these," says my mother, holding one of my many identical black synthetic elastic waistband pants. "I think you should try one more time," I say. "That's as high as it's going to go." "It's fine, then. Once my suit jacket is buttoned, it'll cover everything." We move on to my blouse. In the time it used to take me to get fully dressed without memorable effort, I managed to fasten two of my blouse buttons by myself. I fasten one more, not breathing and grinding my teeth, before I give up and turn the entire project over to my mother. I look at the clock. I can't afford to be late. My mother finishes with the buttons of my blouse and then the suit jacket. She clasps my turquoise bead necklace around my neck and my jingle charm bracelet around my left wrist. I pick out diamond stud earrings. She fits them into my pierced ears and secures the backings. She brushes my entire face with foundation and bronzing powder, sweeps a light pink eyeshadow over my lids, plucks a few rogue hairs from between my eyebrows and my chin, and colors my lips with a subtle gloss. I look in the mirror and approve of her job. We reach a gridlock, though, when it comes to my footwear. I refuse to wear my Merrell mules, or, her other suggestion, white sneakers, and my mother refuses to drive me into work if I choose to wear heels. I have to look completely put together. I need to portray power and sophistication. How powerful and sophisticated are you going to look when you trip and fall flat on your face? Sadly, it's not an implausible prediction. I decide not to risk that particular humiliation with a compromise. Bruno Magli ballet flats. My mother prefers the sticky rubber soles of the Merrells to the slippery bottoms of the flats, but she acquiesces and fetches them for me. There. Aside from my Annie Lennox hairdo, which I happen to love, I look pretty much like I did 4 months ago. Appropriately corporate, sophisticated, powerful, and most important, not disabled. Until I grab hold of my granny cane. There's nothing powerful or sophisticated about this accessory, but unfortunately, I'm stuck with it. I wish I'd progressed to a regular cane by now. A handsome wooden shaft and a fancy brass handle conjure far more attractive associations than harsh stainless steel and gray rubber. A distinguished gentleman with a slight inconsequential gimp, as opposed to a frail grandmother recovering from a recent hip replacement. My mother offers to dress Granny up for the occasion with a pretty silk scarf tied around the handle, but I don't want to call any unnecessary attention to it. Better to just ignore it and hope that everyone can follow my lead. The kitchen is oddly quiet with the kids already gone. Bob brought them to school and daycare early today, giving me and my mother uninterrupted space and time to get ready. I down a cup of coffee. My stomach is too full of butterflies for food. I check the time. Let's go. I've been tense since I woke up, and I think my mother's feeling it too. But getting dressed, even when I was only offering direction, provided us both with an activity to channel all our nervous energy into. Now we're driving into Boston, and I'm a passenger strapped into my seat, and my anxiety is trapped inside the car with nothing to do and nowhere to go, claustrophobic and expanding exponentially by the second. My shoulders crowd my ears, my right foot bears down on the imaginary gas pedal on the floor, and my nerves are screaming, "Go! Hurry up! Let's get there so I'm not late!" Meanwhile, my mother has gone to a calm place in the opposite direction, driving slower than usual, proceeding with extra caution on this critically important day, crawling safely in the first lane of the highway while everyone in Massachusetts seems to be whizzing by us. She is the tortoise, and I am the hare. Under the best of circumstances, we were never meant to share a morning commute. I'm about to lose it when I notice where we are, and every preoccupied, panicky thought inside me goes eerily still. Goosebumps scuttle up my spine and down my arm. There's nothing significant about this stretch of the Mass Pike. No meaningful landmark, exit, or sign on either side, east or west. Nothing anyone else would take note of. This is where it happened. This is where I lost control of the car. This is where my whole life changed. I want to point out the spot to my mother, but before I can coordinate my thoughts with my voice, we're already past it and it doesn't feel worth sharing. I decide to keep quiet, both about the location of my accident and about my mother's driving. We'll get there. We're going fast enough. We park in the Prudential garage and take the elevator to the mall level. Okay, Mom, I can take it from here. Where do you want to meet? I'm not going in with you? I'm trying to present myself as independent, confident, and ready. Not exactly the three words that jump to mind if I walk back into work for the first time with my mommy. No, you can go do some shopping. Let's meet in the food court when I'm done. I'll call you. But I wanted to see where you work. Another time, please. I can tell I've hurt her feelings, but there's too much at stake. I don't even want anyone suspecting that my mother drove me into work. Let them assume that I drove myself here. You sure? Asks my mother. Yes, I'm a big girl. I'll call you. Okay. I'll get Linus some bigger onesies at the Gap. Perfect. Good luck, she says, and hugs me, surprising me. Thanks. I make my way beyond the retail stores, following the route I've walked thousands of times to Berkeley's lobby, nestled in a private, exclusive-feeling corner of the mall. The reception area is exactly as it was, sleek, modern, creamy leather chairs and a glass coffee table arranged like a mini living room in a waiting area. Today's New York Times and Wall Street Journal available on the table. An expensive arrangement of fresh flowers set on the imposingly tall reception desk. Berkeley Consulting embossed in gold lettering on the wall behind it. Heather, our receptionist, sits behind the desk on a platform so that she's well above the floor, looking down, adding to the authoritative impression Berkeley stamps on its guests. Good morning, Heather. Sarah, welcome back. Thank you. It's good to be back. I'm here to see Richard. Yes, they have you in the Concord room. Great, thank you. I walk past Heather's desk, doing my best to minimize the drag of my left foot. Oh, Sarah? The Concord room is this way, she says, pointing in the opposite direction and like she's talking to a sweet, obviously confused, usually woman. Miss Kane. I want to say hello to someone first. Oh, sorry. I'm down the long hallway. Slower than I have. I feel like I've come home. The predictable order of I pass by. The framed photo of on the walls. The lighting, the carpeting, all feel inviting and comfortable in their familiarity. I thought I might bump into along the way, but I wasn't true on saying hello to any side trip. I stop in front of this. In the door. Papers. The pictures of kids are exactly as I lay. Even my black wool sweater is still hanging over my desk chair, ready for days when I feel chilly and need an extra layer, usually in the over-air-conditioned summer months. I thought I'd want to go in, sit in my chair, fire up the computer, enjoy a few minutes of people watching out the window on Boylston Street. But I don't step one ballet flat inside. The reception area and hallway felt like home to me, but my office, which I've probably logged more hours last 8 years home, feels somehow strange. Like it's nesting under investigation. Nope. Go in and disturb anything. I flick off the lights and quietly close the door. When I acted on the impulse to visit my office, I imagined that it would be a quick detour. I should have known better. Berkeley's Boston office is the company's world headquarters, a massive, sprawling corporate space, and my office is located about as far away as it could be from the Concord room. I jingle my bracelet and find Heidi's watch on my left wrist. Crap. By the time I cane, step, drag, and breathe to the Concord room, was already there, seated, drinking coffee, waiting for me, and now watching my grand, granny-caned entrance. I should have early. What was I thinking?